When American and British troops poured into Iraq last spring, they discovered chilling evidence. In police stations and prisons, they found dungeons and shackles and the instruments of torture. Human rights investigators have now begun to examine the practice of torture under Saddam Hussein. NPR's Christopher Joyce talked to them about what they found.
Torturers rarely talk about what they do, so Lynn Amowitz looks for victims. Amowitz is a doctor with the group Physicians for Human Rights. She's found victims in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Sierra Leone, Nigeria.
I have seen this in so many places, but I'm not sure that I've seen it to the extent that I've seen it in Iraq.
Amowitz spent 4 months in Iraq, during and after the war. She blended in, dressed like an Iraqi, with a headscarf and long dresses, and went places no other Westerners visited. She found many victims. In the city of Najaf, she interviewed a gaunt and solemn man who was clearly disturbed and physically wasted. He said police picked him up on the street in 1991. It was shortly after a failed Shiite uprising against Saddam's government. This is a passage from his testimony to Amowitz.
I was hung from a beam in the ceiling by my hands. While I was hanging, I was hit with cables, electrical sticks and electric cables. They had another electrical device that they would attach to my toes, my fingers, or my ears. For 4 months, this went on.
Many Iraqis told stories like this to Amowitz and to the international press. However disturbing these anecdotes are, though, they don't reveal whether torture was commonplace. So Amowitz did a survey, much as one would survey, say, the shopping habits of average Americans. She and a team of 20 Iraqis went door to door, doing a census of torture. They surveyed 2,000 households in 3 weeks. Amowitz says she can't reveal her final numbers yet, but says torture, rape, and other forms of physical abuse by government authorities was widespread and systematic. She says what she discovered surprised her.
I think the gravity of the situation and the prevalence of the situation, how common it was and how many people could tell you that they knew someone who was tortured within their family. Even if it wasn't within their household, everybody had a story. And in some cases, we had 6 and 7 family members out of 9 or 12 family members in the household who were tortured and abused.
Some prisoners got unusual punishments, like having their tongue cut out. Usually authorities wanted information. Almost anything was subject to suspicion.
They were interrogated for a multitude of reasons, being part of an opposition party, cursing Saddam, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, being a family member of someone who was an opposition party. The reasons were pretty consistent.
Some in the Iraqi medical community knew about the government's use of torture, but could do little about it, even if they'd wanted to. Faik Amin Bakr is a doctor and chief of the Medico-Legal Institute in Baghdad, which investigates murders and other unnatural deaths. He says authorities routinely brought him prisoners who said they'd been tortured. Bakr and other physicians would examine them.
Sometimes they are right, sometimes they were not. Most of the time I saw many cases who came with self-induced injuries.
While Bakr says he told the police there were better, more civilized ways to get information than torture, he also argues that the police sometimes had no alternative.
The tortured people, not all of them are good people. Either they are thieves, criminals, killers. They used to kill and they deny their crime. So the police have no other way than torturing these to get their confession.
Members of Amowitz's human rights group also interviewed medical staff at hospitals. Some said the government ordered surgeons to carry out punishments, such as cutting an ear off an army deserter. A doctor at Najaf Hospital told human rights physician Amina Ahmed that he treated torture victims and that officials bragged about their skills.
Did you ever see evidence of torture with electricity?
Yes, I saw. Electric burn. This is the usual way of torture. This is an ABC of torture here. Once I was in the army, when I was serving in the army, I was in a unit that is far away from the city and they have no electric cable. They use some sort of a telephone that is charged by this way.
By a crank. A crank.
And they use this telephone for electric Persia. The security officer told me that we are using this way. He said it proudly. He thought he was inventing something.
Torture is hardly unique to Iraq. Human rights groups list scores of countries that practice state-sanctioned torture. And there's a large body of research on the effects of torture on victims. But how torturers are made has been much harder to figure out. One who has tried is psychologist Mika Haritos-Fotouros at the Aristotle University of Thessaloniki in Greece. She interviewed and counseled secret police officers who'd been trained to torture by the Greek junta during the 1960s and 70s.
The socio-political situation of the country had to be such that would not be criticizing them for doing this. Now, that's one thing. The second is that they went through torture before they became torturers. They make you go through hardships, and also often you have to obey illogical orders.
Haritos Fartouros says most torturers started out as ordinary men. Many were used to following orders. One was an engineer who said his goal was always to do a professional job, whatever the task he was given. Their trainers made them do bizarre tasks, lining up matchsticks in a parade ground, for example, and then beat them, no matter how well they did. They were also taught to dehumanize people who were not in the group.
One of them told me I was repeating the phrases that our instructor said over and over again, that these are worms, we had to squeeze them, you know, we had to kill them.
This kind of distancing is common to war criminals as well as torturers, says psychologist Irvin Staub. Staub is a professor at the University of Massachusetts and the author of The Roots of Evil. He studied the attitudes of war criminals toward the people they murder or torture.
Caring about human beings in relation to these particular people is replaced by the importance of loyalty to one's group, to one's comrades, and to one's cause. They have special uniforms, they have a special language, they have special privileges. There is a differentiation from others.
Human rights workers in Iraq say the clannish and authoritarian nature of Saddam Hussein's regime was the perfect environment for torture to thrive. And Emowicz points out that the government's fall doesn't mean its victims can forget the past and move on.
There are a lot of people that appear depressed, people not leaving the home. Many of the people that I spoke to hadn't left their home and, you know, since the torture happened in 1991. You're not going to be able to reconstruct a country with, you know, 3/4 of the population depressed and at home.
Emowicz says she'll be going back to Iraq this fall to report her findings to the U.S. authorities there and to the Iraqi Health Ministry and whatever judicial system is in place by then. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld gives his assessment of progress in Iraq tomorrow on Morning Edition in an interview with Steve Inskeep.